All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome again to yet another edition of the ICAD Task Force. We will continue where we picked up from last week, starting with a brief roll call. I'll just go through the names that I have so far, and if I've missed you, please let me know. But I have Cheryl Turney, Alex Goss, Aaron Meary, Alexis Snyder, Andy Truscott, Anil Jain, Arian Malik, Gus Gerarsi, Ram Sriram, Rich Landon, Sasha Termont, Steve Brown, Tom Mason, Carolyn Peterson, and joining us again today, Josh Harvey from HCA. And did I miss anyone? Okay. Hopefully others will join.
Jim is on. Jim Gerges.
Jim Gerges, perfect. Great. Okay. With that, I will turn it over to our co-chair to get us started.
Great.
Well, thank you.
Hi, this is... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
So, hi, this is Cheryl Turney, and Alex is on. We're not quite synchronizing our voices yet, though, so we need to work on that.
Sounds good.
Definitely. So welcome to the call today. I was going to start taking us through a little bit of where we got, how we got here, and what brought us to the place that we're in as we start today. The hope is for today's session is going to be very interactive. And so hopefully we can get to that point and get everybody to provide some input. And then also for today's session, the hope is to provide you some homework. But also we wanted to have a little bit of a conversation related to capacity, because we know everybody is dealing with lots of competing priorities with the COVID crisis. So we want to make sure that we utilize our time as effectively and efficiently as possible. And if people are having challenges as a result of that, please don't be afraid to share them with us, so we can see if we need to make adjustments to our timeline and our overall response to this topic. Alex, did you want to?
Yeah, so for today's agenda, we're going to continue with a little bit of this level setting that Cheryl started us on. Then we're going to pivot into a deep dive on a table that we've created in response to all the feedback we got on last week's conference call, as we've been building over the last couple of weeks in March with getting our arms around the prior authorization exemplar and trying to understand the various data touch points, workflows, and considerations across a variety of prior authorization types, so that we can have a framework that enables us to start to identify the recommendations that we want to pursue related to improving prior authorization, but also to use as an opportunity to think about what it's going to mean to intersect clinical and administrative data, and what kind of lessons learned we gathered along the way with prior authorization that can be insightful and helpful for us to bring back to the full HITECH committee for consideration in advancing to ONC's policy framework. I think that once we dive in a little bit deeper to that new table format, it's going to help us have a conversation piece that we'll be able to use as a group moving forward to really advance our thinking around prior authorization and the convergence topic, and that we'll try to do a lot of our work in these sessions on Tuesdays. Where, as Cheryl noted, we are particularly sensitive to the current landscape dynamics and want to wrap up today's call with some discussion around next steps and logistics, while also taking into account any public comments that would like to be submitted. I think we want to go to the next. And the next slide. And the next slide. So I believe what I'm going to do is kind of set us up a little bit and for where we've come from, and Cheryl and is going to tag team with Josh Harvey, thanks to HSA providing some additional support to us. They've been working on building out a new table that we can we'll take a deep dive into today, and then start to actually update and advance through discussion. But I think we really want to make sure that people understand that over the last 2 weeks, we've come from a very vanilla version of prior authorization workflow. We got some really good understanding around trust considerations, opportunity for better information and engagement from and by the patient, really trying to promote a better ongoing dialogue that's based upon transparency, modern technology standards, and that would help us to really achieve a much more patient-focused and efficient prior authorization approach. When we evolved last week's prototype from the wheelchair DME workflow, we got a lot of really good feedback around linkages with USCDI, payment information and cost information, really wanting to try to set up some principles and goals and assumptions from a framework as we move forward, and really not forgetting that there was a process model that we might need to be thinking about. And as we started to really grasp the concept of the data and what does that mean to the overall framework for U.S. healthcare standards, and what that means to opportunities for improvement, we quickly recognized that there was a need to reframe the view that we were taking with PowerPoint flowcharts. And so we wanted to create a tool that would give us a way to start to map out the data, the opportunities, and to have a structure that would help us reveal the opportunities and recommendations that we'd want to advance. So leveraging some prior experience of HITACH, Cheryl helped sketch out this idea of a table. And so the table will give us the ability to get much more detailed in our information. We want to make sure that we're not just reinventing a bad set of processes and a new set of recommendations. So hopefully by having this tool that we're going to see shortly, we'll be able to really take a deeper dive and work collaboratively during these conference calls to propagate that table. Cheryl, would you like to round out that setup?
Absolutely. Thank you, Alex. So also, I think that we don't want to lose sight of the goal that we have in mind. Now, we created this table to try to generate conversation and capture information as we move forward. But it, again, is supposed to be a tool to utilize and stimulate conversation. So the goal of what we submit is not going to be this table, just so everybody understands it. The table is just meant to help aid in our conversation, so we're all talking in the same from the same point of view, if you will, or different points of view, but at least with common information in mind. And also, I think it's important to remember the goal. And the goal, I think, goes back to what I said a couple meetings ago, which is ideally that, you know, the goal is for a patient to be able to, either through telehealth or arriving in a doctor's office, be able to know, you know, what is recommended, how much is it going to cost, whether or not it's approved, hopefully before they leave the office. That's the goal. I mean, if we were going to say what our ideal goal is, that is it. So what would we need to do in today's world in order to move us forward? So that requires some knowledge of what we do today, but we really want to focus on what's the goal. And the goal is, you know, satisfying the patient and the provider so that they can provide the services at the point of service, whatever that point of the service is, and what needs to happen in order to support that. So remembering that that's our goal, and maybe before the next meeting, I'll even sort of write that up as one of our summary points. You know, why don't we take a look at the tool that we created, which is this grid that Josh is going to kindly share from his screen. And I want to personally thank HCA for providing not only people, but time for folks on that team, Jim and his team, in order to help us at least come out with a straw model that we could then share with you guys and at least have something that we could start with. So I really appreciate that.
So I think we're ready to move past slide six, because I think we've covered all the key points so far, Cheryl. I think at this point what we want to do is pivot over so Josh can display his screen and that we can start having Cheryl and Josh walk us through that, and then I'll support once they get the lay of the land mapped out for everybody, then we'll start to take questions. So we're going to remind folks to please say your name. I've already violated that a bazillion times. So my name is Alex. Hopefully you're all using my voice or learning my voice at this point. And we're also going to then use the hand-raising feature so that we can then manage comments and questions as they're coming in. And I'll support Cheryl through that effort.
So I'm going to start with explaining how we originally set up this table so you can all see what we've done so far. I am going to try to get it so I can actually read it.
One of the things we just got coached about is that Josh can't see our chat box now because he's just sharing. So if we want him to make that zoom in, which I think would be a fabulous idea because it's really small even on my very large monitor. So I think what we want to probably do is have you frame it up and walk across. There we go.
Well, for those people that have the Zoom on your desktop, if you go to full screen, it is a lot easier to read, I'll tell you that. But point, when I go to full screen, I can't see who's raising their hand or anything that's written in the chat box or anything like that. So I'm going to go with the version that we currently have right now, if that's okay. I won't be able to see all those things. But essentially what we decided to start with in this grid was what are the data categories that we're talking about? You know, we wanted to capture that information because, again, this is a lot about information and making that information available at the right time so decisions can be made. Now, this is not an all-encompassing list. This is a starting list of some of the data categories. And I will say, we do want to align them to what's in the USCDI, and we have not done that double check yet, but we will. So after today's meeting, hopefully someone will volunteer to take these data categories and try to align them with USCDI version 1 and say what's there today, what isn't there, because that will help us inform things that may need to be added for version 2 in order to support the prior authorization ideal state. And I will, after today's meeting, go into one of the tabs on this spreadsheet and define that ideal state that I just verbally described. And you guys can comment on that and expand upon it as well to ensure that, you know, this is the goal, and this is what we've done to try to support that goal. So the data categories that we identified were some sort of patient identifier, a patient demographic, which could be name, address, county, state, zip code, all of that stuff. And again, we may have to break this down in order to align with what we have in the USCDI, but we wanted to capture so that you would know what we're talking about. Who the payer is, we need that information in order to understand when we're doing a benefits check, you need to not only know the payer, but also the plan that people have, and you actually might even have to know the employer group or what product. So we may expand that list to include the employer group and the product, because an employer group may have one class of employees that have one plan and a different class that has a different plan. But sometimes, especially with formulary lists, it actually goes down to the product level. And so it is more than just even deeper than the plan that we might need. Benefits information. So there will be a need to know what are the benefits, what's the deductible, whether it's an 80-20 plan or a 70% plan, or maybe it's an HMO plan, we need to know what those benefits are so that we can properly share costs and things like that. Whether the data is patient-generated or not, that's going to be really important, because understanding where the data comes from is just as important as knowing, and we have this in the grid on to the right, the actor providing the data may be the physician or the physician's assistant or nurse, but it could be, because it came from the patient, the translation might not be 100%. And then the actors requiring that data, which we have also to the right, again, might be different than who's providing the data in the first place. Or they might have been the one that generated the data. So those are some things that we know we need to capture. Then we also talked about the site of service. Where are the services being performed? Is it a tele, visit or something like that that needs to happen? Or is it a wheelchair that has to be delivered to a patient's address, but the site of this particular visit that needs to get done might be a rehab center or something? Or maybe it's a hospital, and that's where the patient has to have the wheelchair delivered, in the wheelchair example. So, or maybe it's a surgical center. So those were all things that need to be known for some of the actors relative to what they need to deliver. Requirements to satisfy the request. There may be certain data that they need in order to satisfy their request. And we mentioned that last time, like, you know, this person's an adult, but they're only 4 feet tall and they need, you know, a smaller size wheelchair. Or this person is 6 feet tall and 350 pounds and they need a bigger wheelchair. So all those things that you need in order to make the decision and for associating the proper equipment all need to be identified. And again, we're not trying to capture every single thing within that category that needs to be known, but we know that we need data about those things, and that's what we're trying to capture. The status of the or the state of the request. So for something that, for whatever reason, can't be decided on the spot in our ideal arrangement, then how do we know what the status is, and how is the status followed through to a conclusion? Like that, the justification for the request, if there's certain requirements of data required by the payer or the source in order to substantiate the request, what are those things? Maybe it might be a test or a lab, or it might be some other information that needs to be provided, that, you know, defining what that is. The clinical diagnosis is usually required in order to make decisions on prior authorization. Functional status, I think I'm going to need someone else to explain exactly what that is. I know we discussed it in the meeting, and I quite honestly don't remember. Jim or Josh, do you remember what we referred to with functional status? I think this is one that came from Jocelyn.
Yeah, I thought functional status was the patient, some assessment of the patient's functional status that would be needed to justify some equipment. You know, can they walk, how far, that kind of thing.
Exactly. So that one is probably one that we need to make sure that we explain a little bit more. Maybe others understand it more than I do. Occupational status, I think this was one, maybe this is one that came from that work group meeting or Arian also, related to whether it's needed for assistance on a job or something like that. Or I don't know, maybe it's occupational therapy that they're talking about, but
I think it was both. I think part of the goal of occupational therapy is to include what's needed for someone's activities of daily living and how to accomplish them, but also should they be employed, you know, how needing a limb, for example, is necessary for that patient's occupational status.
Right. All right, and then we had history of past treatments. A lot of prior authorizations require that you have some sort of step that you have to go through in order to then say, okay, we tried all these things and now none of them worked, so So now this is why we need surgery, or this is why we need XYZ. And so that would be important. Approval and the decision. I mean, whether it's approved or not needs to be known. In addition to, which we didn't list here, but we should add, what happens, what's the process for, you know, if you disagree with the denial decision, how do you go through that process to, you know, get your case reevaluated? Request for additional information, because, you know, that often happens. Hopefully by what we're doing with our process and defining what the data classes are and categories are up front, you know, the hope would be that payers know what they need and they ask for it all up front, but sometimes they don't. So maybe there is some way that we can try to encourage that for each type of process that's better defined up front. And then again, cost to the plan and cost to the patient. Understanding the cost shares that are related to the particular service would be important. And again, this isn't an exhaustive list. As I said, as we were going through it, a couple of more things came to mind that we need to take into consideration. But that's the data category column, if you will. And we just wanted to have that as a frame of reference because that's what we pulled out of the picture that we had. You know, to support that picture, this was all data that we saw that we needed. We also got some information from Arian from the last meeting regarding the wireframes, and we tried to accommodate that data in here as well. But then when you look at the columns, again, this was just for our ability to say where would we want to put levers? Where do we need recommendations around? Understanding how that data is exchanged today. Is it structured most times or not? And, for a lot of these, the answers can be multiple. But if there is a structure that's available, that's a standard, then maybe looking at that standard and making it more widely adopted might be a recommendation that we could have. Or understanding what the limitations are for some providers that can't utilize electronic capabilities for submitting prior auths. I know today we still get a lot of paper, whether it's faxes or images, how do we fix that problem so that it's not coming in that way and make services available that are not burdensome to the provider so they can utilize these electronic connections. Then we looked at content standards, which is the coding and the USCDI. So we wanted to be aware of the data that was already required under the USCDI and what data isn't in that list that we might say has to be there for prior auth. And we may say that, hey, is part of this a recommendation, we need to move forward more quickly with these items to USCDI version 2 or something. And then we talked about different transport standards. These are the ones we're currently aware of, which is F12 and for pharmacy and CPDT and the HL7 with all of the different projects it's forwarding for APIs. There's also HL7 for the clinical data exchange, the CCDA, and then there's other emerging standards that maybe we need to think about and try to move forward.
If we could scroll to the right so you can finish up the overview of just the structure, that'd be great because I've seen some people's hands go up and down and people are kind of holding people off until you get through not only explaining this one, but also our other considerations tab. I don't know if you're going to go through that or you're going to hold that.
No, let's hold that for after the questions, but I do want to at least get through the grid first. And then we have, again, the actors providing data that we took the first stab at and actors requiring data that we took a stab at because, again, those are things that we need to ensure that there are APIs or something available to exchange data between those parties so that they can support the prior authorization. And then we had room up here for comments and recommendations. So That's the structure of the grid. And again, it's not set in stone. There may be columns that are missing. There certainly are data considerations that are missing. But let's now open it up to questions.
All right, so we're going to take questions from the members. So I want to start. Steve Brown, I saw you had your hand up and then you put it down. So I'm assuming that you are you did that intentionally. But let me know if I'm wrong. Otherwise, we're going to start with Anil Jain.
Yeah, great. Thanks. This is first of all, I think this is great to have a table form. It's much easier to understand. Just a couple thoughts. If you scroll to the left categories, I wasn't sure whether you wanted feedback on specific or broad categories of data that might be missing, or this is the I missed a part of the beginning of this, but it's the start of some sort of homework. But I think when I see some prior auth in my practice, oftentimes one of the questions is, what kind of provider am I that's making the request? And for example, if I'm a rehab doc and I request a wheelchair, it's going to be less stringent than if I'm a primary care doc, which I really am, making a request for a wheelchair. So I think having provider-specific data about the requestor, who's making the request, what specialty they are, is an important part of the data that needs to go to any kind of prior authorization. The other thing that's missing that I often see in these, and perhaps I'm imagining things, but as a clinician, I think having some level of urgency, how quickly do you need this? It goes back to a comment that was made earlier around the functional status of a patient, what occupation they might be. We have to have some sense of whether this is something that can wait a month or whether this is something that needs to happen tomorrow. And obviously, in a non-electronic world, you get on the phone and you let people know that it needs to happen stat or tomorrow. But we need to have some way in the data to sort of transmit that level of urgency. The final one is most of the prior auth approvals that I've seen, again, very limited in scope, I'm very part-time nowadays, has some sort of duration or an expiration of how good or how long that approval is good for. So it's making sure that we have some time duration as part of the data that goes and comes back so that we're able to use that information appropriately in the context of what already happens today, but it happens in a clunky way.
That is a so great input. Thank you, Anil. I think all of the things you mentioned, you know, the way we're looking at this, and Josh is now adding them to the grid, is we want to add the information, and then we can always, you know, review it later and say, no, we don't need this now. But more is better, and it can cause better conversation. So thank you for those. I think they're all valid, and I think we should add them all.
Looks like Josh has done
great,
that,
thanks.
And your next in your queue is Arian.
Hey, thank you. So just one geeky correction and then a couple of comments. Almost nothing in the columns that are labeled transport standards are actually transport standards. They're by and large content standards. We usually distinguish terminology standards from content standards. So terminology standards are the coding and code sets that are used, and then content standards are how they're formatted and assembled. So not urgent, but just worthwhile for correction. And then, I think one of the areas that is missing here is some, and this was the thrust of the comments that I supplied, I think, on Friday. There's sort of hierarchies of need tier or hierarchies of data specificity. And we should be thoughtful about content. Informational content of the sort that's provided potentially through the coverage discovery work in DaVinci, which is primarily around using more of a decision support framework and supplying content on, hey, this procedure requires X, Y, and Z. Providing patient and plan product specific content on prior authorization requirements is helpful. And then the second is status information. So what is the status of a prior authorization request? And then the third is documentation. So in some cases, we've got a lot of very structured information. In some cases, we have narrative information. And so I think in the data categories, we should have placeholders for narrative, clinical notes, and potentially things like scanned documents. As we roll out electronic prior auth, it's likely that we're going to be doing a stepwise approach to getting to kind of the holy grail of fully electronic end-to-end prior auth. And we should be thoughtful about ways of automating the process with things like attachment standards and patient plan product-specific documentation and overall general status on a prior authorization request and response, even when not all of the specific documents are fully formatted and fully available in complete electronic format. So thank you.
Good point.
So,
go ahead, Alan.
I think we need to make sure as we're going through each of this, and then once the speakers are done, make sure that the specifics that they're looking for us to add are actually captured today, because I think there was an action-packed set of comments.
Well,
make
and
sure we didn't miss any of it.
No, and hopefully it's the same information I provided textually in the email that I sent over, I think, on Friday. So, but I can provide you, again, more information via email if that's helpful.
And just an infomercial inserted before the next question. You all are going to get right access to this grid. So once we are done today, we'll give you instructions on how you can go out there, and they'll be emailed. And then within the grid, we're asking people, if you make an update, just, we'll tell you how to do it. But you all will have the ability to go in and modify and update this grid. So keep us honest. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next in the queue is Alexis.
Hi. Just in terms of how it's flowing from patient side, in terms of things that might be missing, I think we need to make sure we're taking into consideration dually insured folks. So in the benefits area, we need to have a place to take in information from both sides, what part of a deductible might be picked up by the secondary insurance. Is there co-insurance included on the dual end side as well? What does that secondary cover and not cover? And what that second payer needs from the provider regarding what the first payer has paid for, whether that's a denial or what portions they have paid and what's left over, is a huge piece. I think another area when thinking about more complex needs in something like durable medical equipment or a wheelchair versus a prior authorization for a procedure or a prescription, we need to consider that more information is needed, maybe somewhere around the 19 to 20 line from the DME provider. Quite often, or most, I think most of the time, if we're talking in terms of wheelchair and not just a basic necessity for someone perhaps after surgery for short term, but something that's going to be somebody's long-term method of getting around day to day, it's very hard to determine what that cost is up front until they've met with the DME person who is really assessing all of the proper equipment they need and what add-ons are going to go into that product. So we might be able to come up with on the list a ballpark, figure from the payers of we start with this and we pay maximally this. But those numbers are going to change drastically depending upon what needs to be ordered. And that isn't always something that the primary care or the rehab specialist or PT, whoever it is able to know exactly what's going to be needed. Sometimes they know that a person has a specific, their patient has a specific need, but they really need the DME person to really weigh in on how they're going to help that person with the equipment and what those pieces might be. Lastly, sorry, lost my place on my list. I think I got them both in there. I think that's it.
Thank you. Those are great ads.
Your next is Rich Landon.
Yeah, data category that I don't see in there would be, let's call it a routing category, and two aspects. The sender has to know where he or she is sending that. For example, is it sufficient to route it to anthem.com, or is there a specific end address for a hospital versus DME versus pharmacy product? So how to get it, where point A and point B are, is first. And then the second part of the data category would be, are there specific routing requirements? Does it have to be through a vendor? Is it certain formats only? Must it be a payer portal? So I'd add that data, routing or data category for routing in both of those senses. Thanks.
So, Rich, I'm going to build on that a little second because, Jocelyn, I think you had a comment in the chat box that ties back to something that Rich just said about portals, fax, and so maybe we can make sure to capture that if it was overlapping with what Rich just said.
I think so. I mean, I think at the end of the day, you have to represent current state and. I got to spend some time with the team on the creation of the Excel on Monday. I caught part of the end of a call. And from my experience, I just think it's really helpful to know what current state is. So as we start to look at the potential solutions to fully automate the workflow, we're making sure that whatever we're doing gives the complete solution that the current, let's say, less than perfect manual work that we require folks to do today, at least get somebody to a full answer versus I think sometimes when we create electronic solutions, we sort of clip hang people. We don't fully solve the problem. So I think knowing what current is, soup to nuts, gives us the ability. I'm a product manager by training to make sure that whatever we're proposing is as good as, if not better, like we want it to be better, but that it has to work just as well as the current paper, fax, phone call processes do. Because I think, I don't know who made the comment earlier about, you know, the urgency, I don't know if it was Arian, the urgency. When I'm on the phone, I can tell somebody I need this off in place now because I have a patient that has an urgent need versus I've got somebody coming in a month from now for a surgery. And this is just part of paperwork getting put ahead, right? That happens in the margins of a fax and in the urgency of my voice as a caregiver on the phone with a payer.
So we've got the time sensitivity part. I just wanted to make sure that because I thought I saw something about the paper portal dynamic, and then I heard Rich bring up the aspect around
I guess my feedback is I think when we look at sort of transport in general, I think we need a column that represents current, what happens today, and whether that means it's I don't know the exact format, but I think for each one of the steps, you need to identify how we're doing this in hook or crook world today.
I think we have to take that as a placeholder and figure out how we might represent it here. But Rich, I'm hoping we captured your comment as well. Cheryl, are you ready to go to the next one, or do you have a comment on this?
No, but I was going to say that we did, I didn't describe the other considerations, but one of the things we captured in our prior discussions was the fact that we do need to describe as the beginning of this the current state. And I agree with what you're saying, Jocelyn, but, you know, it's suffice to say that every provider might be in a different place. So I think those types of things, we might say, well, the current state supports kind of this, and yet what we wanted to do in the future is going to provide this same level of service or turnaround that even the lowest technical partners have experience today, whether they use a phone or a fax or, you know, an image of some sort. you know, maybe they scan it in. But whatever it is, we need to at least support that level of urgency for those cases that require it.
The next in the queue is Denise, and I don't have anybody else queued up after that at this time.
Thanks. Hi, this is Denise Webb. I just had a question about the distinction between the data category of patient identity and the data category of patient demographics. It seems like those two are intertwined. And then I was just going to suggest that on the time sensitivity of requests, we might refer to that as the PA priority. And probably the actor giving providing the data would be the provider, and the actor requiring it would be the payer.
It's Jim Jurgis. We had talked about that exact topic about identity versus demographics, and there is a lot of overlap there, but we were also thinking in the event that fulfillment required information about their zip code or other parts of the patient's demographics that could better tailor fulfillment of a service, that might be different than the subset of data used to confirm identity of the patient. That's what that was meant to get at. Can you imagine?
I can add a little color there, Jim, if it's helpful.
Please.
Yes. This is Jocelyn again. So a good example of this is things that are dispensed for specialty medications that actually have to get shipped to the patient. And so often you need information like, where are they going to deliver the shipment? Is somebody going to be home at what time? Because it's something that requires refrigeration. And then anything beyond that around, you know, need, financial information about the patient, that's very separate than the identity of the patient.
Exactly. I think those are all really valid points that everybody's picking up, and this is exactly the conversation we were hoping to have. Are there any other additional?
Yeah,
we have a couple others in the queue. We have
good.
Steve Brown and then Anil. Steve,
okay,
you're on mute if you're talking.
Okay, there you go. I tried to come off. It's this working from home thing. So this is really interesting, and I think it's a good starter kit. I mean, what I see is sort of a admixture of characteristics and data about several different sets of actors and actions and the like. So there's stuff about the patient, there's stuff about a provider, there's stuff about the insurance company, these kinds of things. You probably need to have other patient-related data that's not just clinical diagnoses, ICD-10 per se. Goodness knows, I know that when we are looking at like authorization for expensive medications, there's other medications and reactions to them or reasons why you can't do it or these sorts of things. There might be lab tests. So I think patient information beyond simple diagnosis, functional state, and occupational status is likely to be necessary, and much of that may well be structured, allergies to medication. There's a justification for something that's, going with the expensive one because they're allergic to the cheap one, for example. So just general category of, other patient information, TBD, that would be conceivably, specific for the thing being requested.
Hey, do you mind if I comment on that quick point? Because I think there may be an opportunity to improve the spreadsheet. We had separately diagnosis separate from justification for request. And I think one of the things we meant by justification was, what are the more granular details, specifics about a patient's status that are needed, like cerebral palsy might be an ICD-10, but the specifics about what the need is to justify the service is what we meant by justification. Is that kind of the same thing you're talking about? And should we word it better if it is?
Maybe so. I don't know. I mean, I think there may be other patient data. I mean, or maybe you want subtypes or something like that. I don't know. But that's at least part of it, and some of it may get complicated. In general, the patient-generated thing, I mean, what you're talking about there is metadata, right? So what's the provenance of a piece of data? So that's sort of like the goose of this duck-duck-goose relationship, because there's data about data that could apply to just about any of this. Let's see. And then there's a bunch of process data, too, and observations about processes and status of process and timing of process and all that might help to, you know, sort of organize things that are roughly similar in an overall model. And what I don't see, and you'll sort of come back to it, is, you know, where in a process does all this stuff need to be applied? And I know that's a next step, but there are also, as I said last time, modeling approaches to bring to bear information at various steps in a process. And what's interesting is you can actually, if you do your process models right, you can actually run simulations and look at the impact on outcomes for example, of delivering the DME at the point of care. The other thing I'd say is in terms of the standards, people are still using HL7V2. So you might want to include that for the as-is, as horrid as that sounds. So it's not all like the antithesis of emerging standards.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt. Did you have more, Steve?
I guess that's okay for now.
You sure? Okay. Always feel free to jump in again, but, thank you for all those great points. Maybe one of the things we can do after, you know, the meeting as a follow-up is, we did talk about defining the data categories, so it's more understandable to everybody, but also we can reorganize them so they are set up by maybe process versus, inputs, et cetera. I mean, I don't know, within the categories, just realigning them so that they're more in that type of order, if that makes helpful for other people. So they're not all mixed together, but we can look at that afterwards, if you guys think that would be helpful.
I think it'll help people who haven't participated in creating it to understand it when you show it to them.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know this is new for everybody here, so I'm really actually very pleased that people are already chiming in and providing input, because sometimes it does take time to just assimilate what has been done and sort of what does this really mean. And again, this is fluid, so if we need to adjust it and you guys have recommendations relative to that to make it easier to utilize, because the goal is how does this help us drive the recommendations? You know, that's the goal of this exercise we're going through. So I think, Alex, why don't we go to the next person?
Okay, that would be Anil.
Yeah, hey, thanks. So just a general comment about the various data categories. You know, one of the things that I do worry a little bit about is today in the paper world, as a clinician, I get to choose what I write, and most of the time, I'm pretty comprehensive. But I do get to choose, and I would think that in the electronic world of making this a little easier, that it's going to be too easy to overshare and too easy for that data to end up in places that it shouldn't be. So for every data category, I would recommend that we somehow tag it as essential for the transaction and should be kept over time or whatever the rule might be, but that other data is simply used in that moment to do the authorization, but is not maintained because it could change the way that information is shared. And also, I think there's information that's going to be transmitted that's very relevant for the approval, but doesn't necessarily need to be with the employer or the plan. And I that probably is controversial for me to say, but we do need to limit
to what is minimum necessary for the approval and not make this into this massive packet of data that's moving around and people are grabbing different parts of it.
It's a really interesting comment. I really appreciate that because it's a nice segue into the fact that at some point we're going to need to really think about this not only from a data flow perspective but also a privacy protection perspective and why we've tried to make sure that we have some of those different views on the task force. So I think at this point, Jocelyn, if you're done, Anil, let me check that before I pivot to the next speaker.
Yeah. No, I'm done with my comment. And I hope we have a chance to revisit this, as you said, later. As we think more through the model.
I think we very much do need to. Jocelyn, I'm seeing you type, but I'm also seeing your hand raised.
So just a couple quick points, and I think this is a really important point that Anil is raising. I think as we look at sort of all of the steps leading up to getting a prior auth done and that ability by increasing transparency to reduce the need for actual PAs and for data to even needing to be moved, right? Because we're giving the provider better, high quality, high resolution information about the patient's specific benefit. We should reduce the overall amount of data that needs to flow. But I think the second piece of that, and we've spent a lot of time around this, around DaVinci and the community and FHIR, is this ability to get to just that, just enough data, just the right data at a given point in time with the flexibility you get from a more modern standard like FHIR. And we've spent a lot of time across all of our use cases really talking about data, provenance, minimal use, and actually have developed some guiding principles that I can share. I'll forward those along to the group to review before our next meeting. But I think that this concept of, you know, sort of what falls under existing TPO and sort of what is the intent as we move forward as an industry to move just the right amount of data and no more, and to ensure that that data has very direct actors and owners of the content as it moves through the healthcare system, I think is incredibly important for us to keep in mind. And I'm more than happy to share the work because it's definitely been, it's been a little bit like peace talks getting to the point that we've gotten to. So we should leverage it.
Yeah, I think, Jocelyn, that's a really important point. You know, we can't forget HIPAA and the minimum necessary, and some, you know, stakeholders do feel like it's easier to just, well, give them everything and then let them figure out, you know, what they need from that. And, you know, that does definitely act in the opposite of what HIPAA intended. And also, I don't think it's the easiest way to do the work. And then with the new interoperability rules, then the holders of that data are then all so responsible. And I think it will get confusing as that data has to be shared down the road. So I think that's a really great point. Did you have others?
There are no other hands raised at this point in time, and we're just shy of 4 o'clock.
So why don't we then describe the other conditions, considerations? Can we go to that since we didn't describe that? And then we can come back and talk about what might be the homework assignment, et cetera, unless there was more questions you wanted to pose to the group, Alex, before we moved on to that.
Now, I think at this point, people are getting clearly getting their arms around the table with the data categories, and we'll come back to sort of the homework assignment and access dynamics and subsequent messages. So I think that it's the parking lot idea and other considerations was something that emerged from some of our calls in the last week. Do you want to walk us through it, Cheryl?
Sure. So you know, we did talk about, as I said, that we need to describe our ultimate goal as well as what the current state is that we are, you know, moving from. So there is an understanding, and, you know, we're not, this is going to be probably the preamble to our recommendations, but you do need to set the stage that basically says this is where we're starting and this is what the ultimate goal would be. And these are the level of steps that we're recommending in order to get there. So those are things that we're hoping that different
folks from this group will, I have to change my little slide here because it keeps popping around. I don't know why on my screen. The folks from the stakeholders from this group will help to weigh in on. So the idea would be, you know, in terms of guiding principles, if there's things that you believe need to be there in order to guide us, for instance, what Jocelyn has said, you know, the principle that we must provide a minimum first step to be as good as what providers and patients and payers have that exist today. So that would be one of our guiding principles. So we're going to need to, as we move forward, sort of break up the components of our resulting white paper that will include the current state, the goal, the guiding principles, and then some of the recommendations. And we might want to organize those once we start getting into it based on different themes or topics. And then we can work on those. But as we discover these, our idea was to create a tab on the worksheet for these topics that we would allow you guys to go in and start populating, so that maybe you want to populate some things on the grid, or maybe you want to populate some things relative to these other aspects that I mentioned. Those would all be there as tabs within the spreadsheet, and you would have the ability to add your info. The one thing that we were going to ask as we ask you to add info is to utilize a little approach that we use in some of our high-tech groups before, where if you add a comment, if you would not mind adding your initials and the date when you added your comment, so that way, as we get those comments, the goal would be hopefully those will come in between meetings, and then in the next meeting, we'll review everybody's comments and sort of see where we're going. Because I'm not going to say very soon, but within a month, hopefully we'll have the framework of our eventual recommendation paper put together, and we'll all be working on different aspects of formulating that. So we'll not only be working on this grid that helps to inform us, but also what the eventual recommendations are going to be. And that way we'll know what's current and what isn't. And then the goal would be, as we review those with the group, if the group accepts those, then we'll just accept them to our document. And then the next week, we'll know who added what and when they added it. So we'll know that we need to bring that up in the workforce meeting so we can keep going forward. That just is a little organizational thing that we noted after we were working in a couple of groups, helped us know what were the next topics we needed to discuss. And because you can't do really an edit and highlight with versions like you can in Word on a grid, it makes it easier to do it that way. The other thing that you could utilize as an option too is selecting the cell and then adding a comment. With a right mouse click, you can add a comment. If you wanted to add a comment that you didn't want to change the underlying data, but you had something that you wanted to say about it, that's another way that you can add information. But again, if you wouldn't mind just putting your name, your initials, and the date when you added it, that will allow us to be able to work it through during the session. Any questions either about the considerations or the parking lot items or sort of how to update the grid going forward? And again, it's all premature because we haven't yet got the structure of the white paper for the recommendations, but that's something that is going to probably be homework for Alex and I to put together in the next several weeks. And then once we get that, we can move some of those narrative topics over to that document, and we would have both a document out there as well as a Word document as well as an Excel grid is the goal. And I kind of like to do it sooner rather than later just because it helps everybody sort of visualize what's the end goal that we have in mind. Any questions about any of that? Again, I can't see the hands raised, so
There are none raised at this point in time. So I think that the key thing here is that folks will be receiving a subsequent email. Those on the task force will receive a subsequent email that will give you the link to the Google Doc. We are looking for you to also receive in that email some helpful hints that were just outlined by Cheryl related to adding your initials and date. Or using the comment box, which will auto capture that for you, that we'll try to review those updates that we will ask you to do between meetings at each of our meetings, enabling us to, as a group, advance this together, and that in parallel we'll be looking to build a report outline, which the other considerations tab will support. So just wanted to kind of recap that to make sure that the instructions are clear. And I think that there are no, I'm not seeing any further comments on either the table or the instructions that will be coming out shortly after this meeting with a link to this grid or table, as we're calling it.
All right.
I think we can go back.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, if there aren't any other comments, we should go back to the slide deck.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. So kind of got ahead of ourselves, so you'll be receiving a link. And can you go back, just make sure I didn't miss anything on that slide. Okay, there we go. We can include those instructions as we move forward. So thank you for that. Can we go back to slide 12 then? All right, so one of the things that we wanted to talk about was that ultimately we would prefer to do our work as a collective team on these calls and to make sure that we're staying in agreement as we progress through the table and other work efforts that will result from the table's completion and the recommendation opportunities it reveals. But we also realized that we were doing a little bit meeting offline. Then we realized that was helping us just get kind of structured and get going. That then along the way happens COVID-19 outbreak. And so we really wanted to step back and consider whether we should be adjusting the frequency of these meetings. We do have a goal of having recommendations drafted and ready in the summertime for the vetting and fine-tuning process, ultimately to support a full complete report submitted and accepted by the end of September 2020. So I'd like to open it up for some discussion and thoughts around how we can complete our work. Could we do that if we move to a biweekly meeting structure, giving us a little bit more room between meetings to do editing, and or do we want to try to continue on our current schedule, or are there other things that we should be thinking about? We recognize that we are in the healthcare field and that a lot of us are being pulled in a variety of ways, so we want to open it up for dialogue to stay as is, go biweekly, think about something else and different that might help us get to the point of our deliverables. So I think, Cheryl, I'm going to open it up for questions if you don't have any other setup.
The only other thing that I did want to say is at this point, we don't have any change in our guidance relative to the end deliverables. So I think that that may come as well, depending on what happens with the COVID crisis. So at the end of the day, if we can encourage people to speak up on this point, because, again, we know you have competing priorities, but right now we're wanting this to be interactive and fluid, but also recognizing that you have multiple demands. My just caution is sometimes with 2 weeks in between meetings, will it be difficult to, people will put it off a little bit longer and then forget, and then we won't have the input. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit of my caution or concern.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I was going to vote to continue weekly simply because, the COVID thing The more work we get done collaboratively together, the better position we'll be in if the COVID thing really, really gets hot in a month and we have to back off. So, you know, I'd be in favor of getting as much done as we can front-loaded to hedge risk. And then later, when things are better defined, it may lend itself to more individual work as we get to defined work streams where people can bring their specific expertise to that part of it.
Thank you, Jim. I'm seeing comments coming in, but the person that's raised his hand is Anil Jain. And please give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I think we should stick with weekly. And I think that if we look at what's happening with prior auths in the COVID-19 era, there are, you know, several things that are happening. But one, everyone is trying to reduce the administrative burden. So for things that we would typically have needed prior auth for, we don't need it. But for things that are critical, like certain drugs, certain equipment, there is a higher burden for prior auth. So if anything, I think we should continue to meet weekly. What we're doing to help reduce administrative burden when we should have our clinicians focusing on care instead of process. And so I would say let's meet weekly. If not everyone can show up on a weekly call, so be it. But I think this is in some way tied to what we're going through. If we can help reduce the administrative burden, there's more time for frontline people, if not for this particular crisis, for the next one.
Thank you for those remarks. Are there other comments? I'm seeing a lot of agreement for what Anil just said in the chat box, that folks are agreeing we should stay on a weekly basis.
One point I do want to make is if we do decide to stay on a weekly basis, we could decide to keep the meetings to an hour if the group would prefer that, or continue with what we have. But if we finish early, we finish early because we may not have enough discussion going on, at least in the beginning, to, you know, continue. And that's completely okay as well. We've had that happen in the other groups. We then made the public comment earlier and adjusted it, you know, if that was the need be, because these are kind of interactive meetings and not like just presenting a topic, you know, for people to weigh in on. This is meant to be a work group. So Lauren or anyone from ONC, I don't know if you want to comment on what I just said, if that's completely wrong, but that is kind of what we did last year.
I think that there's a theme in the chat box related to momentum, and it's resonating for me that if we can nibble at this and keep the cadence up and have the weekly meetings and we get a fair good amount of attendance, we should be able to continue to chip away at this Rock of Gibraltar, as we know prior authorization to be, and can loop people back in through our offline tools if they're not able to be on the calls, and there'll also be extensive review processes, I'm imagining, as we get further down the road in any kind of narrative being developed. So I have not heard anybody in favor of changing anything up. I'm hearing that this is, the cadence is right, the topic is important, let's not let off the gas, let's actually keep going and get to the point where we're really advancing this new tool and iterating it on a weekly basis so that we can continue to make progress. So in the face of no commentary from ONC or others on the call, I'm thinking that's sort of where we're landing at this point in time in the dialogue.
Hey, Alex, this is Tom. I just wanted to add the only thing that will be changing is that we're also in the midst of standing up a new task force related to COVID. And so just wanted to mention that, and I know Lauren will be back in touch with more information related to that, but just in case some of the members, HITACH members that are on this task force also want to be a part of the COVID task force. Just wanted to mention that, you know, we understand that there may be, you know, competing responsibilities in terms of the task force as well as our day jobs. So just wanted to add that as well, more information to come on that.
This is Lauren. We'll definitely have more information there, particularly for the HITACH members, but we don't have a timeline just yet for any HITACH COVID-specific activities, but we'll certainly let this group know once those plans are solidified and see if that in any way impacts this group and their activity.
Thank you,
Lauren. We thank you for that information. I mean, it's clear that you've got an eager group of folks who want to continue the work, but we understand there's some other priorities happening and that there's a lot of support that ONC provides through the platform and the coordination and the coordination between meetings. So,
all right.
Lauren, at this point, are we ready to go to go
ahead? Yeah, I was going to say, I think what we're hearing is what you reiterated, Alice, is that people want to keep going. So until we hear more from ONC, I think that's a good way to go. And I do think we can go early to public comment, right?
Lauren?
This is Sandra. Yes, we could go to public comment.
Okay, yeah, we're about 6 minutes early. But
operator, can you open the line?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Okay, do we have any comments in the queue?
There are no comments in the queue.
Okay, well, we could keep the slide up for a second just in case and check back to see if anybody chimes in. Alex?
Okay, so we're at the point where, you know, we've sort of done a bit of a wrap-up for today already, and that you will be receiving as task force members an email with a link to the Google Doc that Josh was displaying for us earlier and that we were editing. We will ask you to be mindful of indicating any edits and changes so that we can process those between meetings. We are eager for you to get this link in your hands so that you can dive in and start adding comments and edits to extend this work, because the goal is that when we meet next week, gosh, it's hard to believe we're already starting to talk about dates in April. We will be meeting on April 7th at 3 o'clock, that we want to start to have a structure for the next couple of calls where we are really coming to agreement and finalizing that table and then starting out in parallel to think about the report guidelines as Cheryl was taking, maybe start to put some structure to that early on so we keep that end goal in mind, which I think is really important. At this point, I'm not sure that I have any more wrap-up. Cheryl, do you?
Well, I think our tagline or tag teaming is getting better, so I want to thank everybody for their participation today. This is exactly what we were hoping for. So I think we are making some good progress. And for homework, what I would ask is that please go out and check to make sure you have access to the document. You know, some companies like my own actually have a firewall, and it is possible to provide access via a personal email account, but we need to know that if that needs to be opened up so you can communicate that back to ONC when you get the email and they can open that up for you. The other thing is that we are going to try to build out some of the informational items that we're looking for, and hopefully I will work on at least taking the structure to put together, you know, the end deliverable, Alex, so that we can start talking about it, and then people can start actually building out some of those components as well. And hopefully we can maybe do that even before the next meeting, if I can carve out some time for it. But I want to thank everybody for their input. This is was a really good meeting to me in my eyes, and I really appreciate your efforts on this important work effort.
Well said. I do think that we can use some of our prep time that we have scheduled each week to build those out now that we're going to be able to really have this grid/table be the tool that everybody's working offline, and then that'll give us a chance to sort of pivot our thought process to the framework and then start to build out the other considerations tab. All right. So, Lauren, I think you no more comments. I'm seeing no hands raised. I think we can call the question.
Okay.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, any more comments? I don't see any. Operator?
There are no questions in the queue.
Okay. With that, then we will speak again next week, and we're adjourned for today.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thanks,
everyone.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.